This travel show is brought to you by Ted Blank, Luxury Travel and Adventures.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sand and watches the ships that go sailing.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of The Travel Show with your host, Ted Blank of Ted Blank Luxury Travel and Adventure. It's Thursday. Yay! That means we get to talk about travel. Ted, how's your new office?
It's doing very well. It's nice to have a little more space than we had before. So, yeah, it's nice. We're right in downtown Hudson, right in the whole historic downtown. So, great to be there.
I bet it's fun also because you get a chance to interact with the public a little bit more. Do people wander in or no?
Yeah, people wander in. Okay. We walk out and, you know, you can meet the folks who own the businesses downtown. And it's a fun place. It's a fun downtown. There's a lot to see and do there.
Lots of shopping, restaurants,
and, you know, now a great travel agency.
Yes. So. Oh, I'm so
what
excited.
Else do you need?
Not much. So what is our topic today, please?
Well, I thought we would talk a little bit about traveling in the Mediterranean.
Love it.
We've talked about it before,
yes.
But seems like it's a good topic as the weather warms up to think about a place that's a little warmer than it is here.
The Mediterranean always sounds so exotic to me.
It is. It is pretty exotic, actually. You know, it's the collision of a lot of ancient civilizations. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the Greeks and the Romans, and then you have modern civilizations and wars and great food and beautiful wineries and beautiful scenery. So it's a destination that's really got something for everyone.
And when we talk about the Mediterranean, is it called that because these countries are around the Mediterranean Sea?
It's the area that surrounds the Mediterranean Sea. So
okay.
It's sort of all the countries that surround the Mediterranean Sea. Mostly Europe, you know, that's where folks tend to go. The countries in North Africa don't tend to get a lot of tourism, at least from the United States.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it. What do you want to highlight today, please?
Yeah, so I thought I would share an example of a cruise itinerary in the Mediterranean, and it's a two-week cruise. And it's a little different from some of the other cruises out there because it travels in what we call the quiet season.
Okay.
And so, you know, we're all familiar with peak season, right? That's
yes.
when everything is hopping and there are hundreds of people on
right.
every block.
And
then
peak
we've always...
season can be different. And for...
Peak season, it can be very different depending on the place
okay.
you are. In the Mediterranean and in Europe, it tends to be June, July, August, and September.
Is that when Europeans go on quote-unquote holiday?
When Europeans go on vacation, it's okay. when Americans tend to go there. It's when school's out in Europe and the United States. So, you know, everybody and their uncle is traveling in the summer. So
okay.
it's a very, very busy time. It's also really hot in the Mediterranean. You know, and then shoulder season tends to be, you know, maybe September, October,
and explain
March,
that again.
April.
I know it's what that means.
It's just a little quieter. Yeah, it's just a little quieter time. Less tourism, but, you know, still somewhere between peak and quiet. And so the Mediterranean really is a cruise destination all year, but it's just a little bit quieter of a time. And then
okay.
the quiet season is really the quiet time. So it's October, November, December, January, February. You know, the Mediterranean has a climate that's a lot like California. In the wintertime, it can be very pleasant. You know, you might need a light jacket. You're not going to need a winter coat. You're not going to need boots or anything like that. Very, very pleasant weather and far, far, far fewer tourists than you would have for sure during the peak season, but even during the shoulder season. So it's a great time to go. Everything is open. You know, all the main attractions are open. But instead of jockeying for space in a port with people off of 10 or 12 cruise ships, you're very likely to be the only ship in port that day. So it makes for a very different experience, a little more relaxed, not as crowded, and not as hot. So for folks who are looking for that, the quiet season is a great time to go.
So the quiet season of the Mediterranean, as you mentioned, is kind of the fall into what
Late
we
fall
consider
and early
the
winter.
Winter. Okay.
Yep. And the weather's going to be definitely much more pleasant.
And that's when we would want to go
yeah,
anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I've been there in February. I thought it was quite pleasant. You know, the Greeks were bundled up like it was
like in California when they wear their UGG boots. And
60
like...
degrees, and you know you could get by without a jacket on, and mm-hmm. you know. So I find that the climate there very pleasant.
Nice.
In the quiet season.
Nice. Well, let's talk about this particular cruise, please.
So this is one of those cruises again because it's in the quiet season. It isn't going to make sort of the cruise headlines. It's not the thing people are going to look for if they're out there searching for a cruise in the Mediterranean. But it's with a company called Viking, and you've probably seen the ads on TV for Viking river cruises. They also have
Sure.
division that does ocean cruises.
Okay.
And so they have some really, really nicely sized ships. They carry about 950 passengers.
And you've always said that the smaller the ship, the more personalized service you get.
Yeah, the service is going to be much more personalized. The ports you can visit are going to be a little different.
That's
right. They can go into some of the smaller ports, and I'll talk about a couple of those. And, you know, it just makes for, a much more laid-back, relaxed experience. You're not having to jockey with 4,000 people for space. It's a pretty civilized way to travel. And Viking has some great inclusions with their cruises. They do include one shore excursion in each port. They include beer and wine with lunch and dinner. So it ends up being a great value. And Viking always has some good promotions out there in the marketplace. And this spring, they've really been focusing on offering some discounted airfares out there. And airfares to Europe have been really, really expensive. So this can be a great way to save money on flights. And my team and I can kind of help you navigate all those different promotions out there in the market, all the different staterooms that are available,
and
help you find the
fits.
One that's going to be the best for you.
So Viking, we have not talked really about them as much. So I would love to hear about this.
Yeah, so this is a nice 14-night cruise, 15 days, and it starts in Barcelona, ends in Venice.
Okay, what?
Yeah, so
I don't think of that as the Mediterranean.
Yeah,
I
it
love
really
that.
Is. Yeah, Barcelona is probably the largest city on the Mediterranean. And one of the neat things is they start out right away with an overnight in port. If you want to, you can certainly go to Barcelona earlier and spend some time there. But if not, you can come in the day the ship leaves, and the ship spends the night in Barcelona. So you have the opportunity to get off, to stroll around town.
Sure.
And then the next day, you've got a full day of sightseeing available to you in Barcelona. So this particular cruise has three overnight calls, which is really sets it apart, I think, because it's the quiet season and they can move at a little bit slower of a pace.
Nice.
As well.
I like this relaxed
Yeah,
pace.
You're not rushed. In this cruise, you're going to bite off a lot of the Mediterranean. You're going to bite off Spain and France and Italy and even Croatia. So you're going to see a lot, but at, I think, a pretty civilized pace.
Okay.
And so Barcelona is such an amazing city, probably one of the top five cities in the world for tourism, for people who find interesting things to do there. It is built around the old city, which is called the Gothic Quarter, which dates back to the Middle Ages. But then there was a Spanish architect whose name was Gaudi, G-A-U-D-I, who came along kind of at the turn of the 20th century. And of course, he is where we got the word gaudy, because his architecture is very, very different than anything that existed before. And so Barcelona has a Gothic quarter. It has a lot of very interesting Art Nouveau architecture from the 19th century. And then these very peculiar Gaudi structures. There's a park that he designed that's almost kind of like a little bit of an Alice in Wonderland park. There's the very famous cathedral, the Holy Family Cathedral. The only way I can describe it, it looks like when you take wet sand and try to make a little pyramid out of it, it looks like a little wet sand towers. And it is not complete yet. And so in Barcelona, you can see these Gaudi pieces, learn about him. And then it's sort of the birthplace, the spiritual home of tapas. And so if you want to walk down the very famous main street in Barcelona, it's called Las Ramblas, and you can enjoy some tapas, maybe a glass of Spanish wine, cava, which is Spanish sparkling wine that comes from the area, and just really have a nice, relaxing, activity-filled day in Barcelona on your second day there.
What a perfect way to start the cruise.
Yeah, what a great start. Absolutely.
Love it. And then from there, where do we head?
We're going to head north along the coast of the Mediterranean.
Okay.
And we're going to stop in a little town called Sète, which is in France.
Okay.
And it's actually, it's a charming little beach town, but most people would probably leave and go see one of the two main attractions there. One is the city of Montpellier, and it has one of the most beautiful food markets, farmers markets, in an enclosed environment. So it's a really neat thing to see. Or you can continue a little further to the walled city of Carcassonne. And Carcassonne was built in the Middle Ages, and it's one of the very few cities in Europe where the walls still exist. So it looks like kind of a fortress from the outside. But beautiful city. If you're into castles and knights in shining armor and all that stuff, a really, really neat place to visit in the south of France.
And again, a little port that we probably couldn't get to in a bigger ship.
No, the big ships actually would never call it that port. It's a little off the beaten path.
Love that.
So then the next port is a big port. It's the city of Marseille, which is actually one of the largest cities in France. And for some reason, I always think of the movie On the Waterfront.
Yes.
You know, when I think about some of these big port cities. So it's a big industrial port. But the city has really kind of undergone a renaissance in the last 15 or 20 years. It has a beautiful historic downtown. It has an amazing cathedral. It's called Notre Dame, just like the one in Paris, but it's Our Lady of Marseille instead of Paris. And if you remember the book from when we were kids, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yes.
Did you ever have to read that?
Probably, yeah.
Well, it was written by the same guy who wrote The Three Musketeers.
Okay.
And the Count, when he
I
first...
I probably know more about that. That's,
yeah. Well, anyway, the Count spends some time in prison at the beginning of the book in a little fortress called the Chateau d'If. And the Chateau d'If is a fortress and a prison that guards the entrance to Marseille Harbor. And so if you want a little bit of kind of that macabre history, you can go out and visit the Chateau d'If. And
something for everyone.
Something for everyone. See the cell where the person who was the inspiration for the Count of Monte Cristo was held. So if you like seafood, they are very famous for their bouillabaisse, which is a seafood stew, and cassoulet, which is kind of a bean, almost a casserole. That if you like beans, you probably like it. If you don't like beans, you might not enjoy cassoulet, but it's worth trying, at least. So onward then to Monaco.
What? We get to go out to all these
places? Yes, all these places. We're only on like day five now. Yeah, so onward to Monaco, which is a very tiny little independent country, completely surrounded by France. And of course, it's where Grace Kelly married Prince Rainier, and that really put Monaco on the map. And so you can visit the royal palace where the prince lives. You can see the entire Monaco army. It's about 24 people. It's a very small country. You can go to the cathedral where they were married. Mm-hmm. You can see the tombs of Princess Grace and Prince Rainier. And the other interesting thing about Monaco that people maybe don't know is that there's a very famous Frenchman who lived in Monaco named Jacques Cousteau. And Jacques Cousteau was, of course, that famous oceanographer. Mm-hmm. And I remember, actually, he came up the Mississippi River one time when I was a kid, and we went down to the levee and we saw his boat there. But he started an aquarium in Monaco as part of his marine research establishment. And it's really one of the neatest aquariums that I've ever been to. Really, really well-done displays. And I happened upon it because I was there on a rainy day. But it's really actually worth a trip, and it's worth seeing. Lots to see and do in Monaco. If you want to play James Bond, bring your tuxedo, and you can go to the casino, and maybe you'll win enough to pay for your next cruise.
Maybe.
Maybe, or maybe not. I don't know. The house always seems to win, don't they?
No kidding. And then we're from there.
Well, then we're going to kind of keep hugging the coast of the Mediterranean and heading down along the Italian coast to the city of Livorno.
Okay.
And Livorno is the port for two famous Italian cities, Pisa and Florence.
Okay.
And so, of course, Pisa is where the Leaning Tower of Pisa is. And this is an overnight call as well. So you have a chance to see and do quite a bit.
Make your make that funny picture that everyone does.
You could make
does.
The picture of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's actually really worth seeing. When I'd seen pictures of it before I went the first time, I thought it was this delicate little structure, you know, like the top of a cake. It is massive. It has massive, massive marble bricks that they use to make it. It's incredible. And when you stand up close to it, you're like, wow, I really can't believe this thing hasn't tipped over yet. So it's a neat thing to see. But then you'll head up to Florence, which of course is where Michelangelo was from, the very famous artist. And so you can see the sculpture of David there. And we'll come back to Michelangelo a little bit later as well. You could go to one of the two very famous art museums there, the Accademia or the Uffizi, both which just have some really incredible Italian art. One of them was the private collection of the Medici family, one of the most wealthy families in the history of the world. And you can also see the cathedral in Florence. It's called the Duomo, or the Dome. If you're really brave, you can climb, I don't know, 400 or 500 steps to the top. But the Duomo was really the first building built in the modern era with a freestanding dome. And so it's an incredible piece. It's really what inspired the construction of St. Peter's in Rome. They saw this beautiful cathedral in Florence and said, well, we can do better than that. And so that's what got us St. Peter's in Rome, which is even more massive. But the Duomo is a very interesting cathedral. And if you want to get out on the countryside, you're very close to the wine regions of Italy. You can go to Chianti, try some Italian wine, have some cheese, maybe some sausage, and just enjoy some time in the countryside too. So because it's an overnight call, you've got a little bit of time and could do a couple things.
Wow, I love
there.
That.
So onward to Rome, which would be the next stop. And Rome isn't very far away, so it's a pretty short evening sail to get there. You know, we talked about Michelangelo, who was not the architect of St. Peter's, but he worked on the Sistine Chapel inside, which is absolutely worth seeing. And, you know, there's just so much in Rome. There's the Colosseum, there's the Forum, there's the other basilicas as well. So, you know, you have a day in Rome, and it's one of those days where you'll probably try to pack in a lot. And you may think to yourself, wow, this is really neat. I'd love to come back to Rome. Or you could also say, you know what, been there, done that. Maybe I'll go someplace else. So you get kind of a one-day overview of Rome on the cruise.
Perfect.
Yeah. More of Italy, though. We head south, and we'll stop in Naples, which is another big port city in Italy, and it's the gateway to Pompeii. You could see the ruins of Pompeii, which are really, really fascinating. And the story is very moving, but the preservation and what you can see in there and understand how cities were built thousands of years ago is really, really quite interesting. And then you pop down just a little further to the island of Sicily, like the soccer ball off the toe of Italy, mm-hmm. and the ship stops in the city of Messina. And Messina is a really beautiful little town. It's a little harbor. It's where the ferries leave to go back and forth between Sicily and mainland Italy. So it's a bustling little town. But of all the things to do there, the one that I would really recommend is to head up into the hills to the city of Termina. And Termina is famous for three things. It has a beautiful historic downtown. It has a hotel called the San Domenico Hotel. And there was recently a very naughty series on TV called The White Lotus. It was on HBO. And that was set at the San Domenico Hotel in Termina. So if you want to have a cocktail in the bar, you can do that. They actually filmed it there. So if you watched that, you'd recognize some of the spots. But then it has a Roman amphitheater. And the amphitheater is really, really well preserved. Beautiful amphitheater. But when you get up into the amphitheater and you sit down in your seat, right staring you smack in the face across the bay is the biggest volcano that's active on Sicily, Mount Etna. And so you can see Mount Etna. Oftentimes it's smoking. It's a really, really incredible panorama. And you know, fall tends to have pretty clear days. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be hazy in the summer. So I think you'd have a pretty good chance of getting some nice views from the amphitheater in Termina. We'll visit two smaller cities in Italy. Then one is called Crotone. And Crotone is in southern Italy, and it's actually a very poor part of Italy. So you really have the contrast between the wealthier mm-hmm. north and the poor south. And a lot of Americans who have Italian ancestry, those folks would have come from the south, from the poorer, more rural area. So folks might actually have some ethnic roots in this area. Then we continue to the town of Bari, which is another port. It's on the Adriatic Sea. It's kind of the gateway for the ferries that cross to Greece. And the thing that's neat to see in Bari, they have these little houses, and they're called Trulli houses, Trulli. And the best way I can describe them is they're like a Smurf house for real people. They're round, and they have these cute pointy roofs and cute chimneys. They're all white, but they look like a Smurf house. And so there's a very specific reason why they were built related to the climate and the materials available. So it's a neat story to learn when you're there. But when you're in Bari, you want to catch the Trulli houses. And I don't know, I describe them as Smurf houses. So.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So we're almost to the end now. We'll cross the Adriatic to Croatia. Beautiful, beautiful country. And we'll stop in the town of Šibenik. And Šibenik is another really well-preserved fortress city. So you can kind of make your way through the old town up to the top to see the old fortress. Or you can go a little further afield to the city of Split, which is a beautiful city on the Dalmatian Riviera in Croatia. Just a beautiful city. In the summer, it's a very bustling resort. In the winter, it's going to be kind of a quieter, very historic town, so well worth seeing. And then the final port is Venice. And again, the ship will spend the night in Venice, actually near Venice, because Venice doesn't allow cruise ships anymore. And you'll have an entire day to go visit Marco Polo's birthplace, his home. You can see the cathedral there. Venice was one of the richest cities in the world. You know, think about like a Singapore or a Hong Kong or a Dubai of its day. And so the cathedral has so much gold in there. You can't even believe it. But Venice is a beautiful, charming, atmospheric city. You know, you can go for your romantic gondola ride. You could head out into one of the islands to learn about the glass that they blow out there. So just a lot to see and do in Venice. And then unfortunately, it's time to head home.
Wow.
Yeah. So 14 days. That's a lot packed into a two-week cruise. And I think you could pretty safely say you would have seen a lot of the Mediterranean in those 2 weeks.
I agree. Ted, how can we go about planning this vacation, please?
Yeah. So you can give me a call at 651-964-8245, or you can visit my website at tedblanktravel.com, and we can send you more information about this cruise, and my team and I are happy to help you plan it as well.
And Ted, what do we call this cruise again?
This is a quiet season Mediterranean cruise on Viking Cruises.
Sounds absolutely fantastic.
I think so too, yeah.
Thank you so much. Great to see you, and we appreciate your time. Ted Blank of Ted Blank Luxury Travel and Adventure. The show is called The Travel Show on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings. This travel show has been brought to you by Ted Blank Luxury Travel and Adventures.